Hey, Adam.
Yes, Mike.
Is Great Sasuke in House of Torture?
One of many questions that I have coming out of this week of professional wrestling in Japan, particularly the Taka Taichi Despy Mania Just Tap Out show that took place yesterday. He did throw up the two sweet, so maybe. I don't know. It feels as though Great Sasuke is too entertaining to be a part of that group.
I tell you what, he also, if he just, who did he just wrestle as well in a title match? Why am I brain locking on this? Shame on me. But bottom line is, that doesn't matter. What matters is we've had a bunch of retirement, or not retirement, but we've had a bunch of anniversary matches recently. We've had
Yes.
Adam's friend, Takaiwa, had
Yeah,
his.
Tatsuhito Takaiwa. We've had, well, this show right here, the Taka Taichi Despy Mania show, with Taka's 30th anniversary and Taichi's 20th anniversary. I need to throw in, Mike, you're going to need to put in a correction on the wrestling news tomorrow as we record this on Tuesday evening. The Wednesday wrestling news is going to need a correction because you said it was the 20th anniversary of both Taka and
Oh, I
Taichi.
know it. I know it. I know it. The shame on me for that. It was the 30th anniversary and of Taka, and that's about what I'm going to get to here when talking about Yuji Nagata and Jun Akiyama. His is on the horizon here, if I'm not mistaken.
We
And we're
also just had, while it's nowhere near as many years, we just had the 10th anniversary show of Konosuke Takeshita
yeah.
in DDT.
And it's just I. What his is amazing because he's still so young, and it's like we're celebrating 10 years of a kid who's barely scratched the surface. The next 20 are going to be incredible, and that's going to give him 30. And you look at Togo still working and still looking good outside
Oh,
of a New
he's
Japan
working all
ring.
right.
Outside of a New Japan ring, you see what Taka is doing. You see Nagata, and you still know he's great. You know Akiyama in a limited capacity can still go. And it's like that third, or I guess it would be the third generation, correct? Of Nagata and all those guys. Would it be the
Well,
third
third
generation?
generation of New Japan,
Yeah.
obviously, it's not the same for all the other promotions, but the guys of that similar vintage.
Incredible. They're still incredible.
Well, the crazy thing about all of them, and you could throw Satoshi Kojima in that mix of guys, Minoru Suzuki as well. Not necessarily talking about all being of the same generation if you're talking about dojo classes, but just that same, early to mid 40s, really closer to 50 or just above 50. There's so many of them that like they had a bit of a drop off, right? Like they had their peak, they dropped off a little bit. And then they've just stayed at that slightly or somewhat below their peak, but still very good level for so long. I mean, Nagata is that way. I mean, Taka just, he's nowhere near what he was before, but he's no less than he was 3 or 4 years ago. Kojima, all these guys that, while they don't necessarily need to be the focal point, the most pushed guys in a promotion, Nosawa, they still definitely have value. And it's crazy when you think back to guys, of the era of wrestling that we both grew up on and how old and washed so many guys looked by the time they were into their late 30s, early 40s, much less 45, 50, 55 years old. It's a whole new ball game.
Absolutely. And Great Sasuke just wrestled Masato Tanaka for the 0-1 title a couple of days
Yes.
ago. At this point, it was on September 10th. And I haven't seen that match yet, but I'm actually interested now in seeing that match after seeing Sasuke in the six man. And I'm sure it's nothing to write home about, but I hadn't thought about Sasuke in a minute, and you go see him in that match. Same way with Togo, where I'm so frustrated with Dick Togo as part of the House of Torture and part of that whole group. When you get a chance to actually see him in there wrestling, it's just, I don't know.
He's
It
still
was
Dick
actually nice to
Togo.
see.
We don't get to see it a whole lot. We're gonna jump around a little bit here on this episode of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. Thank you for joining us, everybody. Again, the Big Audio Nightmare, it's free everywhere. So we appreciate everyone who's listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. If you're one of the people that is still listening via your F4W Online Wrestling Observer subscription, we appreciate that as well. We'll get to New Japan and talking about the New Japan shows that took place last week. The first ones with full crowd cheering. Well, not full. They're half full, and there were crowd cheering sections, but still crowd cheering, full crowd reactions.
When they gave them something to cheer about.
Yeah. We'll get to that later. Feel good shows from a crowd response perspective and the reactions the wrestlers had to them, but you know, we'll get to it. I don't know how much, though, because I don't think there's really a whole lot to say about those shows outside of it was really cool to hear fans cheering again. We'll also get to the Stardom pay-per-view, which took place a couple of days ago as part of the Five-Star Grand Prix, but there were also several championship matches on that as well. Talk about a few other things, but we touched on it at the beginning, Mike. The thing I want to talk about to start off this show, it's what may be my favorite limited series of shows in all of Japan. As crazy as this sounds, talked about the one back in January with that awesome Taichi Doki match. That was a legitimate match of the year contender. Now we have, instead of just Taka Taichi Mania, it's Taka Taichi Despy Mania from what I think is the beautiful renovated Yoyogi National Gymnasium Stadium number 2. I desperately want more companies to run shows there. We had the GHC title versus GHC national title match and show last year from Pro Wrestling NOAH. Not enough people run this building, though. 1,940 fans, full cheering, and oh my God, what an atmosphere.
Yeah, oh my God. It number one, you're exactly right. It looked fantastic. And I don't know if it is cost prohibitive to. I don't know what it is, but you're exactly right. I would love to see more. I would love to see not only more shows in there, I would like to see, because it is kind of open and spacious. There is so much you can do with the layout of that if you wanted to. And there's so many ways you can dress up the aesthetic of that place for entrances because you have so much space coming out. But
It's in the round. Like, it just seems like any seat there would be great.
Yeah.
It's right sized when you think about where a lot of promotions are at right now. It's smaller than a major arena, but it has the feel of an arena show instead of, you know, a small house show vibe. You know, and like I said, 1,940 fans, not sold out, but damn good crowd. And again, when you figure what this is, I mean, obviously you have a lot of New Japan presence on this show, but this is a just tap out show on steroids. So to have this level of both fan response and attendance is pretty damn impressive.
And I got to be, this snuck up on me, because when you go to the newjapanworld.com page, you know, it was there, but I hadn't heard a whole lot about it. And there were,
because it's one of those New Japan World separate pay-per-view events.
Yeah. And
so it didn't have, for whatever reason, it didn't have the buzz, and it didn't, the thing that really wasn't out there that much. I know a few people were responding to tweets that I had yesterday and saying, yes, this had been announced in advance that there would be crowd cheering, but it's not like when you think about the New Japan shows this past week that had cheering, the upcoming October 30th Pro Wrestling NOAH show that is going to have crowd cheering, the Tokyo Joshi Pro and DDT shows that have had cheering. I feel like that was publicized much more than this was. So that was, for me, when I turned this show on and I heard the crowd yelling and screaming, that was a nice surprise as well.
Oh my God, yeah. And then I was looking for the card in the couple of days leading up to it, and you know, I had seen a Minoru Suzuki tweet about it. I had seen this. I had seen that. I had heard some names that were going to be on there, but I didn't see a full card. So I could come into the thing with a lineup that I was not expecting. I figured there was going to be a whole bunch of groups. I knew Jun Kasai was going to be there. So it's like, okay, there's that. I know what that match is going to be. Although I didn't know what that match was going to be because of the ending and the post-match, but we'll get to that a little bit later on. But I didn't really know what the card was. And then you see the card and it's like, I wish somebody would have hyped this up more. I hope the people that are talking about it now, as we're going to do here, and I see people on Twitter and online, more and more people by word of mouth have checked this thing out. This is a hell of a show, and it's a hell of a cross-section of a bunch of groups, from GLAIT to Stardom to All Japan to Freedoms. I mean, this was really good, and it was another nice showcase of JTO. You know, that's the forgotten about
showcase
part
of JTO and showcase of something that we've talked about in this podcast. I know I've written about it. I think I wrote about it in last week's edition of the Three Count Fall newsletter that, you know, when you talk about, I know you were one of the people, rightfully so, who pushed so hard for Ultimo Dragon to be a Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Famer. You've talked a lot about guys who are great wrestlers and then went on to be great trainers and how much that should play into their Hall of Fame consideration. I'm not saying that we're there quite yet with Takumi Shinoku, but when you look at the Japanese wrestling landscape and you look at the people who have come through the Just Tap Out system, it's pretty incredible over the past few years. Just when you look at Micah, who then went to Stardom, Hayato Tamura, who went to 01 and then now is one of the main guys in GLATE. You look at someone that I know we're both going to talk about momentarily with the women's tag team match that was on the show, Tomoka Inaba, who is now a member of the God's Eye stable in Stardom, just to name a few people that have gone through that system, have gone on to become stars elsewhere in major promotions. There's more people coming too, whether it be the giant Ren Ayabe, who we've talked a little bit about and I've written a little bit about. He doesn't have the most charisma right now, but the dude is tall. He's not like clunky. I always go back to any really tall, lanky wrestler. They always have to pass my Hiroshi Nagao test. Do you remember him? The
giant Vabo.
The incredibly uncoordinated young lion who then had a cup of coffee in Hustle, playing off his volleyball background before he went away. But Ayabe definitely passed that test. You've got guys like in the opener, Akira Jumanji, who, if you're not overly familiar, he was the guy that sort of had what most people look at and say, well, that's the New Japan Young Lion gear. You know, the black boots, black trunks. He's a guy who somebody is going to snap him up a year or two from now, and everyone else is going to say, wow, how do we miss out on that guy? Takumi Shinoku and the people that handle the training at Just Tap Out, they know what they're doing, and they've really hit on something.
Yes, and, you know, Shima is going to be – that's the guy that the next person I think would be in line as a trainer.
For sure.
And obviously, you know, if he doesn't get in, there's no way Taka won't. But as you fast forward 20 years from now – and if he continues up his pace and he continues to train, yeah, you know, and he's got places to put all of those guys too because of his time in the, you know, that has been invested in this. And the fact that there's so many tentacles off of his group that are in every single other group in New Japan, All Japan, no matter who it is.
Absolutely. I mean, the combination of Taka being who he is, that's name recognition, you know, maybe getting people in the door, and then just companies bringing people that have come through his system in and them knocking it out of the park. I mean, again, you think about Micah. When she first came into Stardom, she maybe had 25 matches, I think, that she had done up until that point. And you look at, you know, she was certainly not a finished product by then, but how quickly, you know, she's developed over the last couple of years into the type of wrestler that she is, just as one example. So, yeah, Just Tap Out is, you know, it's one of those promotions that doesn't get talked about a lot. You know, it's the former Kaientai Dojo before that whole split. But it's if you want to be on the lookout for wrestlers that are a little bit off the radar that might be in major promotions in the not too distant future, you know, it's one to look out for. Another guy is Cannon, who was part of that promotion and then now wrestles in DDT. So something to look out for and a nice little subtext to all the other action on the actual show.
Now, did anything about the first match on this show make you want to see a one-on-one between Minoru Suzuki and Shrek?
Certainly not the forearms from Shrek.
I didn't realize how old he was. He's 50 years old. I had no clue because he fights. I mean, he's been fighting in Rising, and he looks, I don't know how the best. He's like 5'9" and like 260 pounds, and he's wide, and he's
the best way you could describe him is he looks like he should be in the cantina in Star Wars.
Yes, he really is. He's from the bar scene in Star Wars, and I didn't realize how old he was, and you see him out there, and it was a true rogues gallery sitting out there for that first match.
Yes, yeah, we had the Suzuki Goon group going against Shrek, Hideki Sakine's group. The first women's six-man tag really was fine. It was 6 minutes, 55 seconds, not a whole lot to it. Seeing Yasu Hirano on this show was a trip. As it was Asami Kodaka, Yasu Hirano, and Yuji Hino defeating Eagle Mask, Fire Katsumi, and Ryuya Takakura, who is another guy who I still kind of wonder if Takakura is going to break through and break out at some point. He kind of came through the JTO system at the same time that Hayato Tamura did and showed some promise, but was nowhere near the prodigy that Tamura was. But you go from there, then we get to the business end of this show. And what I thought was a great tag team match, one of the best tag team matches I've seen all year, and they got almost 20 minutes. It was Micah, as we talked about, a graduate of Just Tap Out, and Mirai teaming together, even though they're in separate stables at this point in Stardom, to take on two wrestlers we've talked about a lot. If you watch the Stardom New Blood shows, you've become familiar with them. And in the case of Tomoka Inaba, you see her more and more on main Stardom shows. But Aoi and Tomoka Inaba, this was great. The crowd response was awesome. The crowd was so into Micah. Micah and Inaba's interaction was just off the charts. Awesome. Aoi was just, she's such a cool character and getting better and better in the ring. Such a unique character. And then those last two lariats that Mirai threw, I think even Stan Hansen would have winced at. Just ridiculous.
Absolutely awesome. Just the aesthetic of the thing with Inaba and Aoi, and you got like Micah and Mirai, who are not that much older, but it was like two moms about to fight their kids. And that is like, and that's probably a terrible way to say it, but it's like, it was just so great. And Micah and Inaba together was awesome. And I'm thinking as the match is going on, because the match gets better as it goes along. As Adam said, it goes nearly 20 minutes. And I think, you know, initially it's like, okay, it's probably gonna go like 10. As your brain is watching, it's like, and it's building, it's like, okay, they're actually going to be giving this thing some time here. And it was awesome. And right before she landed these kicks, I'm thinking, I wish Inaba was like 4 inches taller, because the only thing that's going to be a negative with her is the fact, and it's not a negative as much in Japan because Natsupoi, and there's plenty of women of her size here, but she's only like 5 feet tall. And it's like, man, I wish she was a little bit taller, because her offense and her look and everything about her, I think, is so great. And then she goes and lands this kick to the head of Micah, which puts Micah flat on her back. And I'm thinking, well, you know what? When you can kick that high, it won't matter. I honestly think of the hand of, you know, full of names that, you know, you can talk about as the future of Japanese women's wrestling and somebody that's going to be an impact player for Stardom moving forward. She's got it. She looks like she stepped out of a video game. She's young. She's already good and gotten a lot of this stuff already. Her aesthetic is good. Her offense is good. She is one of the people that I'm like really excited for moving forward, because if you're this good now, and to me, you got this presence now, the whole act, the whole thing, her, and we'll get to them later on with Suzuki and Risa Sarah. There's other people we can talk about in that class kind of too, who are a little bit more advanced than she is. But like, boy, another reason to think that things are rosy in the next future here, in the future of Stardom and women's wrestling in the next couple of years.
Well, yeah, and it's another one we've talked about, the almost perfect batting average that Stardom and Rossi Ogawa have had as far as who they've brought in from the outside over the past few years under the radar, you know, people they've brought in, whether it be, you know, that they've ended up signing or just brought in to work shows. But you think of Natsupoi and Mirai being the two most obvious examples. You go further back, people like Micah and Himeka, like really no one is struck out. Everyone has, you know, hit a double, at least if not a grand slam. But this was, you know, just to reinforce what you said, this is a great match. And it's like you said, the first 5-10 minutes, like, oh man, yeah, this is really good. I knew this was going to be really good. Then you get about 15 minutes and you're like, wow, this is really good. And then the last 5 minutes, you're like, God damn, this is a great professional wrestling match. And not that you would not expect it to be very good given who was involved, but you just, you know, I thought maybe you'd get 10, 12 minutes. I think if this match had happened outside of a Just Tap Out ring, maybe Inaba and Aoi wouldn't have gotten quite as much offense, or maybe more to the point, wouldn't have been able to kick out of as much. But the crowd reaction to them and rallying behind them, and also, you know, rallying behind and celebrating the returning homecoming Micah, it just made for magic. And then it was also just so great to see Micah and Mirai, who have been, you know, both of them doing such a great job in Stardom, get to wrestle in front of a loud, vocal, cheering, chanting crowd. It's these shows that where we finally have cheering. The atmosphere is off the charts anyway, and that if the fans that are in attendance get a great match, it takes it to a level beyond really, I think, even what things were at pre-pandemic. Like, I don't know that we're fully prepared for, you know, whether it be a Wrestle Kingdom or a big IWGP title match, or, you know, some big GHC title match in Noah, or, you know, a big match or big tournament final in Stardom. I don't think we're fully prepared for how wild and exciting the atmosphere from a crowd perspective is going to be once cheering is back and we have those sorts of big matches and shows. I mean, we got that a little bit here, and then we got probably the biggest taste of it we're going to get for a while in the absolutely insane main event death match rematch, more than 3 years in the making after El Desperado had his jaw broken and had to miss the Best of the Super Junior. El Desperado and Jun Kasai. This was off the charts awesome. Legitimate match of the year candidate. I don't care if you like death matches or you don't like death matches. Jun Kasai is just such an awesome character and has so much crowd support. And then El Desperado, it's insane. Top five wrestler in the world. And if he wanted to be, he could be maybe the most effective deathmatch wrestler of our generation, if not more, because he's willing to take stuff. But the thing that separates him from so many guys, his selling of these things and his ability to draw emotion out of the crowd instead of just getting hit with it and moving on. To me, when you factor in the post-match as well, it was one of the most remarkable performances I've seen by anybody this year in any promotion, any country, you name it.
It'll only be the people like us who know how good El Desperado is because we follow the product closely and we listen to each other, you know, point out to each other how great El Desperado is and how everybody else is missing it. But you mentioned the emotion when Kasai brought out the straight razor, which was very early in the match. When he broke out the straight razor on the outside of the ring, the first time that Desperado really gets busted open, he'd already torn the mask. Because basically, Desperado started the match with wrestling. And then,
yes,
very quickly had the epiphany, you didn't come here to see this. We have a ring surrounded by plunder. We have barbed wire in the corner. We have this, we have that. I'm picking up this chair. Let's go. It's
yeah,
time.
They go Masato Tanaka, Mike Awesome style chair swinging duel. And then I would say probably within, what, 2-3 minutes at most, Desperado's mask is completely ripped off and is hanging around his neck. The first time we've seen El Desperado's face since the Best of the Super Junior tournament a couple of years ago. It's always shocking when that happens, for one, just because, hey, masked wrestler got his mask torn off. But also, like, once the match goes, like, you sort of start to feel like it's El Desperado again. But he's so much more expressive in some ways with the mask than without, which is, it's not something you would normally expect.
Well, and that he's one of the best emoters of any masked wrestler, you know, certainly out there right now. You know what I mean? There's guys who can do it.
Oh, for sure. It's him and Starlight Kid and then everybody else. And to me, we've talked about before, they're the two closest things to Jushin Liger as far as projecting emotion while wearing a mask that I've seen.
And he gets the mask torn immediately, almost. And there's no, it wasn't like, you know, he got hit with something that, okay, it's going to bust him open and do it. No, it was just, we are getting this out of the way early. Kasai ripped the mask. He starts going after him, dumps him from the ring. here comes the straight razor. Now, when everybody goes, oh my God, the straight razor, look, to be honest with you, he had an issue, and you'll see this, you know, he's got it, and he's got the gig in the other hand, and he goes with it, and then he's got to switch hands so he can gig him where he wants. And it's like the gig is actually much worse than the straight razor.
Yes, 100%.
But then, as Adam mentioned, it's how he sold it. He screamed. And he's screaming like a guy that just got his forehead cut with a straight razor. And yes. It's that small thing that we all get desensitized to it. And, you know, again, Adam, you've been watching death matches and have been into them a lot longer than I have. I mean, there's a certain level of, like, you do see things and it's like, huh, because it's how people sell it. You know, sometimes, like, the guy, Mance going through a chair, you should always wince at that. But I've seen Matthew Justice and Mance go through so many chairs, and they're not really selling it as much either. But, like, Desperado sold every 100%. Single thing in this match like he was in severe pain. And Kasai is, as you mentioned, there are very few. Talk about charisma. You just talk about natural presence. You talk about a guy that I don't know what the hell else he'd be doing if he wasn't a pro wrestler. I don't know what else he'd be doing. But he is, again, this is 20-plus years of Kasai just being.
That's what I was going to say. I don't think people fully realize how long Jun Kasai has been doing this. He debuted in 1998, August 23rd, 1998. So this was just a little bit more than 24 years after his debut. And it's not as though, like, he was just doing straight wrestling and then started doing death matches 5 years ago. He's been doing this his whole career. And like you said, if you have not seen Jun Kasai, or let's say you've only seen him since the pandemic and you have not heard a crowd react to him, he has this crowd of almost 2,000 people in the palm of his hand from the moment his music hits and he comes out. It's something to see.
Yeah, he's not, you know, it's not Onita, but at a different level, it kind of is. And people, you remember the Peter Pan show way back where they couldn't believe it sold out the first one? And it's like, because you have guys like that on the show, and you have a bunch of guys like that, and you have people that are really big fans of these guys that have been around for a long time. And people forget about how much that actually matters, you know, especially for those who are only in one world, whether it be just the New Japan world, which most people are, or if you're just in a Noah bubble or whatever it is, like, you kind of forget that these outlaws and these other people that aren't in the mainstream all the time still, again, draw incredibly well and still have pockets of fans that are, you know, incredibly, incredibly loyal.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And then here with an opportunity to see this match that's 3 years in the making and to be able to go and cheer, like we said, it certainly made for quite the atmosphere. The other thing that I want to touch on this, we mentioned a little bit earlier, is just how, like, El Desperado, this wasn't some, you know, some wrestler from a major promotion coming and doing a death match. And it's like, well, the death match guy is going to take all the stuff. I'll maybe take one thing and then I'll hit all my moves and win. Yes, Desperado eventually won, but he took so much abuse in this match, whether it be barbed wire boards or skewers or the razor boards or the fork boards. He was cut up all over his back, on his arms, obviously on his face. He was every bit as much the deathmatch guy in this match as Jun Kasai was.
Now, do you draw a distinction between the blade board and the butcher knife board?
I think you have to, if you're a discerning viewer.
There was, I tell you, it, you know, the live barbed wire, there was actual live barbed wire that were all fake barbs on there. You could tell that right away when the first time that Desperado got sent into it as he came back off of it. You saw the huge, huge line going across his back with blood coming out of it. So, as you mentioned too, it was not a Kasai showcase where Desperado is holding on there for everything. There was give and take, and obviously Desperado was on the, you know, his heels for a majority of it. But, you know, that's the obviously he had to tell the story that way. And ultimately, at the end of the day, gets the Pinche Loco. This thing goes a half hour. Sure as hell didn't feel like a half hour.
No, and this flew by.
Yeah, and it was
flew
great.
By, and it told a great story. It was, like you said, Jun Kasai in his element, El Desperado, trying to be in that element as much as he could, taking a beating, kicking out of everything, and then finally he hits a Jun Kasai-style version of what El Desperado would call a Pinche Loco, basically a J-driller of sorts, and then he hits his version of it and got the win. And then the post-match was heavy by pro wrestling standards.
Yeah, and we really can't do it any justice. You're going to have to check it out, and we'll definitely both retweet it once the show is up.
The great thing, too, we should mention is that because this was a New Japan World pay-per-view, and there were New Japan wrestlers on it, there is subtitled backstage comments and in-ring promos like there normally would be for a New Japan show. And so this entire, whatever, 6, 7, 8 minute long back and forth between Desperado and Kasai, there, that is translated. That is subtitled. That is up if you go up on New Japan World. And I think it's also on the NJPW Global Twitter account. But the gist of it is that Desperado basically said before the match that he didn't care at all if he lived or died. And Jun Kasai basically, you know, called him out for that in a very emotional way. And Desperado accepted that in a very emotional way. Again, we're not doing it justice at all. It's something you need to seek out and watch for sure.
Death matches are just like any other match. And if the story is there, if the backstory is there, if the emotion is there, the match is, it's not secondary, but it's just acting out to get to the end and the close of this emotional story. And there have been plenty, you know, the whole thing with, you know, 440 and GCW, or John Wayne Murdoch in Cologne, or with Akira being stuck in the middle of that when they started that whole thing up of, like, you know, it's the story. And the story here was incredible. And if you're going to watch the match, you have to watch the post-match, and you have to watch the translated promos if you don't speak Japanese, because it was incredible. And as Adam mentioned, you know, he was willing to give up everything. Why? You finally reached your goal. This is what you wanted. You made it to New Japan. You got to the pinnacle. You're where you want to be. Why would you want to just say, you know, I'd die for, no, you got a lot to live for. And then at the end, Kasai, when he's all done and it's all over with, a bloody Kasai goes in the front row and he takes his daughter.
Tiny little daughter, like she can't be more than a couple years old.
Oh yeah, but she's used to this. Didn't sell a thing. Looking at her father, blood all over her, and they go to the back, and there's some really cool pictures that were taken in the back, and then there's obviously the press conference then afterwards. It just, I'm gushing over it, but really, it was excellent. And I think, again, going back to the beginning where I didn't really know the card, and it was kind of, I want to say, downplayed, but it wasn't really heavily out there. I want to say the whole thing kind of caught me by surprise, but
caught a lot of people by surprise.
Yeah, just the whole feeling of the show, everything about it, I thought was top notch. And it's one of those times where that indie, you know, and obviously there's New Japan support and there's this, that, and the third, but like this type of indie show, this type of self-produced show that, you know, over the years, like, this is why I love to look forward to these types of things, whether it be a Nagata producer or whoever it is. Like, if the show is good, the show is good. And in a time where New Japan's in a malaise right now, we're sitting here looking at the clock, waiting on All Japan. You know, that big show is coming up. We're kind of in like some limbo here right now, especially as we're waiting towards, you know, getting towards the end of the year in the Dome. Man, I needed a show like this. And boy, did they deliver.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to put it. That's exactly how I felt after watching this as well. And, you know, we'll just look forward to seeing when the next one is. I talked about earlier that show in January with Doki versus Taichi was incredible. Match of the year candidate for sure. We got a couple here on this show as well that we talked about at length. And like Taichi and Takuma Shinoku said in the ring when Desperado asked him when the next one's going to be, they said, whenever we feel like it, whenever something interests us enough to do it. And Taka said, you know, we do these shows that New Japan can't do or isn't able to do or isn't willing to do. And I thought that was a very good way of putting it.
Yes.
And I think as we briefly transition to talking about New Japan proper, before we talk about Stardom, I just want to make a point that I think is related to what we just said. I mentioned a little bit to you before we started recording. Every time I see someone in New Japan in a different environment, whether it be here on this JTO Takataichi Despy Mania show, or Great Okan in Pro Wrestling Noah, or Tiger Mask and Yuji Nagata in All Japan, or seeing the New Japan main roster guys on a Strong show or on a New Japan USA pay-per-view, or seeing the likes of Will Ospreay, Tomohiro Ishii, other people in AEW, I always find myself saying, God, I enjoyed that so much more than I've enjoyed seeing those guys on a regular run-of-the-mill New Japan show in Japan lately. I'm not talking about a G1 final, but I'm just talking on a regular tour show. As much as I'm thrilled that they're starting to introduce crowd cheering back and the crowd reactions were awesome on the 5th and the 6th, and seeing Tana cry in the ring and cry in the back was like, it was legitimately emotional. I was so happy for him to have those moments. That to me is all overwhelmed by, I don't need to see a main event angle over who's daddy and a diaper on someone's head. I don't need to see a main event 6-man tag match that's a tornado dog kennel hell match. Like, I'm sorry, all the cutesy bullshit, all that stuff, I know it's been around for a long time in New Japan, and I know everyone's personal mileage varies, and maybe if you're just seeing the stuff now, it doesn't bother you as much, but I am beyond my limit of having any interest in watching that part of New Japan shows. And I can say with 100% certainty, I would not watch that 6-man tag match coming up, as one example, if I did not do this podcast and I did not write the three count fall newsletter. No way.
Well, I mean, just
if I didn't have to, I wouldn't watch it.
No. And you look back at the JTO show, you see Goto involved in something that's not Chaos versus House of Torture. You see Togo and Gato, not Gato being Gato, but not being that Gato. You know, I just, it's
seeing Dick Togo hit an awesome top rope senton instead of turning the lights out in the back.
Yeah, it's just, it's arg. And this tour, there was not much on it to begin with. And we're in a little bit of a malaise right now. You know, coming down after the G1, there is no AEW involvement as it stands right now. We're looking basically a long ways away at the Tokyo Dome. It just, if you're going to give me a surprise, like, give me something positive, a tornado kennel dog nonsense. That wasn't it. That wasn't the gimmick I was looking for. That wasn't the gimmick match I was looking for to make me excited, because it's more nonsense. Number one, with dog kennels, which they seem to have a real fetish for now. Toru Yano, I guess.
Yeah, it's Gato's version of a pole, I guess.
Yeah, No. So none of this is striking my fancy at all. You know, yes, I'm happy for the live fans that are getting to see Okada and Tanahashi in different combinations with Hanma or Tenzan or whoever, or Tenzan, you know, whoever the hell it is. Not Tenzan, Christ. But
Makabe?
Makabe, thank you. You know, it just, there's nothing here, and I'm glad Tito's getting experience, and he's getting main events.
Now, Tito and Minoru Suzuki on the 5th was awesome.
That was.
I loved that opener of that show. But again, that goes back to what we've talked about in recent weeks on this show. If a match with Minoru Suzuki against Bad Dude Tito or a Young Lion match, if that's the thing that you come away with thinking that's one of the best things you saw on the show, that's not good.
Did you know that was one of the only things they put up on the New Japan 1972 webpage at first after that show was Tito and Suzuki, and then they had the thing where it's like, here are the results. It's like, Now, granted, they may have added some stuff later on as the day went on, but it's like, I was thinking the same thing. Like, Adam would get a kick out of this, because here we go. The first match, the one thing that we wanted to see on this tour, as the tour is laid out, one of the very few things, it was the first match, and now it's out of the way.
Yeah, we mentioned that on last week's show. Let's briefly talk about there's the show coming up this Saturday or Sunday, I believe, the show on the 18th and the show on the 25th. Those are the, I guess that'll be Sunday. Those are the two big shows remaining on this tour before we head toward Declaration of Power. But the show on the 18th, it's in Beppu. It's Shingo Takagi and Bushi against Kenta and El Fantasmo, a rematch of something we've already seen at Korakuen. Great Okan, Jeff Cobb, and Gideon Gray against Fale, Chase Owens, and Hikuleo. Naito, Sanada, and Hiromu versus Zack Sabre Jr., Taichi, and Taka Michinoku. Okada, Makabe, and Homa against Jonah, Shane Hayes, and Bad Dude Tito. Finley, Taguchi, Master Wato, and DKC against Will Ospreay, Hanare, TJP, and Francesco Akira. That should probably be pretty fun. Then the never open weight six-man tag team title Tornado Dog Cage Survival Match, where there will be a dog kennel cage in each corner, and you either win the match the normal way, or you can eliminate members of the opposing team by locking them in a kennel. I am so embarrassed that I am saying this. I feel like this should be happening right after the Dup Cup airs on an early episode of TNA weekly pay-per-view. But it is Goto, Yoshihashi, and Yo defending the never open weight six-man tag titles against Evil, Yujiro, and Sho. And then the main event, elimination match, Tanahashi, Tama Tonga, Toru Yano, Kushida, and Jado, what a team, against Jay White, Anderson and Gallows, Taiji Ishimori, and Gato. That's what we have coming up this Sunday.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the 25th, because there are two things that stood out to me about the 18th. They added the stipulation to the never open weight six-man match. It's not the main event. Okay, well, what's the main event? The main event is Bullet Club with Tanahashi and Yano and Kushida and Tama Tonga and his manager, Jado. And I'm looking at those two, and it's like, you know what? The six-man Tornado Dog Cage match could even be more ridiculous and more stupid if they have, like, an idea of something heavier planned for the elimination match main event. I don't know. I may be thinking too negatively about the whole thing, but I have a weird feeling, and I have a reason to pause over that whole show, where it's like, all right, just get me through this so I can get to the 25th and we can be into October.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. My thought when I saw, at least as of now, that it's not listed as the main event, and maybe that'll change, but seeing it not listed as the main event makes me feel even more confident that the House of Torture is going to win.
Yeah.
Because you can still send the people home happy with, you know, Tanahashi eliminating Gato to win with a high fly flow. You kind of wash the taste out of people's mouths. But yeah, I not a whole lot to me that I'm looking forward to on the on the 18th, then on the 25th.
How many times, Adam, has Chaos had those six-man titles, a version of Chaos, from the time they've started those things? And unfortunately, it's nice to see Yoshihashi with some gold, but it's not doing a fucking thing for Goto and Yo. So it's like, you might as well go ahead and flip it back and then flip it back again, or put it on whoever it is you're going to put it on after them, because it doesn't matter. This whole thing doesn't matter.
Well, it's a shame too, because that run that Goto, Yoshihashi, and Ishii had outside of the House of Torture part of it, like, they had some awesome matches in that run and really made those six-man tag titles feel like something more than a joke. But with House of Torture involved, you know, it is going to feel much like a joke. And I'm sorry, like, I know people are saying, well, the House of Torture, they got booed. So, you know, when the crowds are finally allowed to cheer and boo, so that validates the House of Torture as being a valuable thing. No? Sorry, it still sucks.
Is Sho better off now?
Months from now, it's not doing anything for anyone.
Is evil better off now than he was, especially than he was before all of this? Hell no, he wasn't.
Is Show better off
exactly
than he was?
No, and those are the two you got to worry about the most. Evil has lost so much over the last 2.5 years. I mean, to the point where he is, I don't want to say that he has regressed into the Spirit Halloween character that a lot of people poked fun at when he debuted.
I'll say it. He totally has.
There you go. There you go.
To me, what's happened is that this group, Evil and Show, have basically sunk to Yujiro Takahashi's level. Like, when I watch them, I don't feel there's any difference, which is really messed up when you consider how good Evil was, how entertaining he was as a tag team wrestler, and the potential that Show had to be one of the faces of the division. I don't know. When I watch it, and I know I'm not the only one, because every time I tweet about it, I'm like, maybe this is an unpopular take. And then everybody responds with, no, it's not. This is an unpopular take. I don't watch these guys and think, oh, God, I can't wait to see them get their asses kicked, no matter how much, you know, Kevin Kelly goes crazy and goes, ha ha, every single time Dick Togo slips on a banana peel. It just makes me not want to watch the shows. Not even just not want to watch their matches. It makes me not want to watch the whole show.
I want to ask him one day what he truly thinks. I want to get inside the mind of Kevin Kelly, you know, and ask him when he sees this for the millionth time. I got to give it to him. I don't know how he keeps it fresh every time. I would be rolling my eyes on
it. I have no idea how that guy does that job. And part of it is because there's the reward, if you're a commentator, of like having great matches or great stories to call, which New Japan still does have a lot of. But, you know, you're calling 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 shows on a tour where it's the same stuff over and over and over again. And you as an announcer, much like the referees, have to act like you have amnesia and you've never seen this before and you're outraged and shocked or you miss it. Like it's that is not an easy job to do. And he handles that better than I think I could imagine anyone else would.
Well, Lord knows he came from a lot of time in a circus in WWE. So he was able to try to figure out how you can try to put a positive spin on things over and over again. But if you
in some ways, it would be like having to be the play-by-play announcer for an entire loop of WWF house shows back in the day, where you had the same shows at the same crappy finishes every time, and you had to somehow make it sound like it was new and it was either exciting or shocking or you were outraged. And God love him, he somehow pulls it off.
Who is in House of Torture? We've got Evil, we've got Show, we've got Yujiro. Who else we have here?
Dick Togo. Well, then there's some weird rumor out there. Again, I don't know how believable this was or wasn't. Like, I just saw it floating around. But that before he, left New Japan or was no longer a part of New Japan, however that all played out, that the plan may have been for Carl Fredericks to join House of Torture.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just,
you know what?
It throwing stuff out there that I've heard, and I don't know that I buy it at all, but it's dumb enough that I could have seen it happening.
Yeah, well, you know why? I can, because they don't have a foreigner. That would make complete sense if you wanted to do that, you know, because, you know, United Empire does. If you wanted to, put in a guy there that can be your torture guy. See, J.D. McDonagh's new stupid character in NXT would be perfect for this. Whatever the hell is J.D. McDonagh, just
what
ridiculous.
What the hell is a J.D. McDonagh? Is that the disgraced former president of the Blackhawks?
That's I'd actually rather see him in the ring wrestling against Bron Breakker right now. But again, that's for another show.
No, seriously, what's a J.D. McDonagh? I have no idea.
J.D. McDonagh is the new, let me see how to actually spell his name here too. Jordan Devlin. Remember Jordan Devlin?
Oh, yeah. The like little squished down Prince Devitt wannabe.
Well,
am I wrong?
Well, they're both Irish,
I remember seeing him thinking, wow, this is, to use my close, longtime personal friend and podcast co-host Jeremy Deemer's verbiage, when I saw him, I was like, well, this is Kirkland's Devitt.
Well, you know, Prince Devitt was a very influential guy, so I could see his blood running through. But yes, Jordan Devlin.
But not running cold.
Is Shady McDonough. He would be perfect for that group. But, you know, as Evil and Yujiro and Sho and Togo were there, let me ask you this. Put them up against Paul Jones's army. Baron Von Raschke, the Barbarian, Tejo Khan, and Pez Watley. Who you got?
It's the same thing. That's the best comp I've heard, is that Dick Togo and House of Torture are the Paul Jones and said army of New Japan Pro Wrestling. That is very accurate.
Yes, and they ain't no Superstar Graham and Jake Roberts in this group. No, we're talking full Paul Jones 87. That's where they're at. Yes. There with House of Torture. Yes. But we've tortured ourselves enough with that.
Let's get to that show on the 25th so we can move on from this boring New Japan tour and get on to things we're more excited about. It's and this is at Kobe World Memorial Hall. So this is a big show. Like, it's not a small building to fill up. It's Shingo Takagi, Hiromu Takahashi, and Bushi against Kenta, Hikuleo, and El Fantasmo. Toru Yano against Doc Gallows in a singles match will be the second match on this card. Great O'Conn and Jeff Cobb against Bad Luck Fale and Chase Owens, which kind of feels like a de facto number one contenders match to see who faces the winner, whoever comes out the winner of FTR and Aussie Open, which will be happening at Royal Quest in early October in London. Then Naito and Sonata against ZSJ and Taichi. I'd much rather see whoever comes out of that get a shot against FTR. That actually should be maybe one of the better matches on this entire tour. Okada, Makabe, and Honma against TMDK. We've seen that already several times. Tama Tonga and Kushida against Jay White and Ishimori. That leading into both the Ishimori, Kushida, and Jay White, Tama Tonga title matches coming up at Declaration of Power in October. Francesco Akira and TJP defending the junior tag titles against Taguchi and Wato, which should be good to very good, but you never know, you know, when the Wato banana peel is going to appear at any point during a match. And a lot of times anymore with Taguchi, it's all dependent on how far they lean into, you know, all his antics. So I don't know. Guardedly somewhat excited for that. Karl Anderson against Hiroshi Tanahashi for the never open weight title. Surprise, that belt still exists. And then Will Ospreay versus David Finlay for the U.S. title, which should be awesome.
Yeah, silver linings and all clouds. They have been building towards Kushida and Taiji Ishimori. So that's going to be great. You know,
it'll be great. But again, it goes back to what I've been saying for months now. The story in New Japan is that there are no new stories.
Yeah.
Everybody is just trying to win something they've already won before. With the exception of Ospreay, you know, trying to win the G1, trying to win a Wrestle Kingdom main event. But everyone like from Japan in New Japan, they're all just trying to do stuff they've done before. I don't care at this point. I've seen everybody wrestle everybody over and over and over again. And yes, some of these matches are great, and in the moment I will enjoy them. But until we get the likes of Uemura and Tsuji and guys like that coming back, and that's not happening anytime soon, like seeing those guys actually go on a run to win their first IWGP title, like that's the stuff I want. And we just don't have any of that.
Doc Gallows is always going to be Doc Gallows. You know, Carl Anderson, you know, since his prime time in New Japan has got a lot of miles. It's been a lot of time, you know, a lot of life lived since that moment. He's in the semi-main event against Hiroshi Tanahashi. You know the match is going to be good because Carl Anderson's a pro. Tanahashi's great. They've worked together a lot. It's going to be good. You know, the finish, who knows? You know, that may not be good. We're in WWE territory now where it's like, well, the match will really be good, but God knows what the finish will be.
Yeah, so, at this point, the likelihood when I go into a match like this, I go into it thinking it'll be a bad finish, and then I'm pleasantly surprised if it isn't.
Do you think that Carl Anderson, the team with Gallows, I think can have usefulness if they are putting over teams across the country on Strong and things like that? I think is their best benefit. And be a goofball in the Bullet Club scale, all that stuff, be what you are, because that's what you are, but changing the roles, But Anderson as a singles, do you think there is any more mileage we can get out of Carl Anderson at some point here in the near future with him as a singles? Or, and this is nothing against him, has time moved on enough where he's just going to plug up the middle and take up space?
I mean, I guess I'll take that point by point. First, I would say that as a tag team, their best role is in a promotion that I don't watch.
Well, well, that is not going to be the case, though, because obviously yes. The relationship with Rocky, I mean, they're going to be
New
around.
Japan's trying to get themselves to be a promotion I don't watch, but it's not going to happen, and it couldn't anyway because I do this podcast. So that's point one. Second point is that I have no idea on Carl Anderson. Dude was an awesome singles wrestler in New Japan 10 years ago. Great, and crowd got behind him. It was awesome. Crowd still remember him and react to him, but I have no earthly idea what he is or isn't capable of on a regular basis. Like you said, here there's no way this is going to be an awful match in terms of the body of the in-ring action, because he still is good enough. Hiroshi Tanahashi is still amazing, even though his body is completely broken down. But yeah, I mean, if he gets a run, you know, as a single going forward, let's say he gets a run in next year's G1, no earthly idea.
Do you believe that if he defeats Hiroshi Tanahashi, Carl Anderson should take Tanahashi's place on December 1st, wrestling Tatsumi Fujinami?
Hard no.
Talk about 30th anniversaries before we're at the 50th anniversary. No lie of tradition founder and god body, literal god body, Tatsumi Fujinami, who is pushing, what, 80? Whatever the hell he is. He's
70.
70?
I think he's 68. Well, I'll look it up here. I'll pull a Wrestling at Random Patreon here and do some on-air research. But he's got to be... If he's not 70, he's 68 or 69.
He's one of the most, and again, we've seen a lot of guys do the gimmick, like Great Kojikas and all that sort of stuff. Like he physically...
So he was born in 1953, so he will be 69 years old on December 28th. I didn't fully understand, but wasn't there also something this past week with like... Fujinami singing a song on some show in Japan or something?
I don't know, but now I want to see it if it is out there.
I feel like I saw enough like poorly Twitter translated things from his contemporaries that something must have happened. Oh, by the way, did you also see, we haven't really had a chance to talk about this, I think just because there isn't a ton of news yet, the IGF is coming back as a management company?
No, I saw that Gleet is actually going to do an MMA promotion, but I did not. No, I didn't hear this.
Gleet, that'll be your next correction coming up on the wrestling news. Gleet, not Gleet. But yes, the IGF, this is from August 26th. Andrew Thompson, postwrestling.com. IGF is back as a management company. It was formally announced that Antonio Inoki is reviving IGF, which was initially founded in 2007, blah, blah, blah. Everybody who listens knows that for the most part. IGF now stands for Inoki Genki Factory. Inoki will serve as an advisor, and the company plans on they'll be managing athletes and celebrities, along with doing entertainment planning and advertising. They're also looking into the idea of hosting pro wrestling and MMA events in the future.
Yeah, you know what? I know that Inoki is in a weakened state, but this just sounds like a grift with his name. And I don't mean to sound too nasty on this, because it may be a really well-funded, well-thought-out, well-staffed project. From what you just read there, I can see this going absolutely nowhere. But that's okay. If he can get his name out there, that's good. If he can continue to do something off of it, that's cool. You know, there is a legacy he's going to leave with people wanting to use, you know, his spirit and his name, you know? And it's fascinating because Inoki and Bob Arum and Don King and Vince McMahon are all still alive. With Inoki, it's going to be interesting. He's got such a unique and controversial and layered legacy, how he is remembered and how people use his likeness and his name, and how he allows that, that's going to be really interesting to me. That is the more I kind of think about it here, that is kind of fascinating because, you know, the spirit of him in wrestling and MMA on both things, there are going to be people on both sides of the ledger that are going to watch. It's same with Maeda, you know, later on too, but, you know, nobody is Inoki. So that is a really interesting thing. Now, will it mean anything? I don't know. You know, look at where Japanese MMA is at right now. I mean, they announced Floyd Mayweather, and not even that has made anybody bat an eye. They've gotten to that well a zillion times. So,
Can we talk for a minute about that Glate MMA announcement? Because, well, I don't think it's going to make a huge splash in the Japanese MMA landscape. When I look at this and the fact that this is something that was announced by Kiyoshi Tamura, it actually kind of makes me sad. Because when I see this and I see how, you know, the UWF Ledette side of Glate hasn't really taken off. I mean, there'll be matches here or there on the shows. You know, they've had, I think, a couple full UWF rules shows, and, you know, the big shows that they do at Tokyo Dome City Hall are usually half UWF rules, half regular rules, but it definitely doesn't seem like it's an equal part of the promotion at this point. Like, I don't really know how to read this other than, like, this is the beginning of the end of the UWF rules portion of Glate. Because if you've got actual MMA matches being promoted by the company, like, where does that leave UWF rules? It leaves it the exact same spot that those sorts of promotions were left when MMA started taking off in Japan, and as you moved into the 2000s. So I don't know, kind of, I'm looking at that with a bit of a wary eye.
You know why I believe it could be different, but I don't know if it'll be successful, but I think it could be different in that there are so many wrestlers now, and we have had a generation that has been trained to understand there is professional wrestling, there was UWFI and that style of professional wrestling, and then there is MMA. Now, I don't know if there are enough filthy Tom Lawlers of the world who truly respect and understand those separations. The more younger wrestlers that I talk to and I've been around, they seem to get that. You know, a lot of people, well, why would you give great results? Because your favorite wrestler watches it, because your favorite wrestler likes that style. Same sort of thing with, like, sometimes with Stardom or with women's wrestling. It's like you have no idea the kind of influence that it has until you look back. And again,
well, or until you look on Twitter and see Daniel Garcia wearing a Jamaica t-shirt.
It's like, you know, it's never going to be the tops of pro wrestling. You know, I don't think we're gonna ever gonna get that again. But I think it may be so ingrained where, to some level, I think it could work. And I think there's still a space to have UWFI matches on professional wrestling Glate shows. I just don't know if this is desperation because they feel they got a bunch of fighters that can't do wrestling or vice versa, and they think they can fill a void. I don't know. I just look at the landscape there and I go, okay, is this, you're trying to get the pro wrestling side and the UWFI side out. Do you have enough resources to do both? Is there enough interest to do both? Because, again, this is a niche of a niche of a niche. And it's a very influential one, like I mentioned, but it's still lower on the totem pole than a lot of things that are going on within that company. So I don't know. I can see why you would be very wary of it, for sure.
Well, I'll
but
tell you
I think
why I'm very wary
possible.
Of it. It's a couple of lines here in this story, again, from postwrestling.com. Kiyoshi Tamura, executive director of Glate Wrestling, appeared on the promotion's official YouTube channel to announce the launch of Glate's MMA division. Glate's MMA will formally kickstart on December 14th with the show at Tokyo's Korakuen Hall. Tamura expressed that some of the wrestlers in Glate have MMA backgrounds and are MMA-oriented. Other than Tetsuya Izuchi, I don't want or need to see any Glate wrestlers doing legit MMA fights. I don't care, you know, you're talking about a Yu Iizuka, Takanori Ito that have, you know, MMA-influenced styles. The last thing I need to see and the last thing Glate needs is putting those guys in MMA matches and let's do, you know, let's have Yuji Nagata early 2000s all over again? No. To me, it's answering a question no one's asking, which is never a good thing for a promotion. So,
and that, you know, this is where we're talking about anniversaries and going back into time. You know, 20 years ago, we were talking about Kiyoshi Tamura and would he be able to get along well enough to ever have that fight with Kazushi Sakuraba that we were looking for and all of that. And it's like, at the same time we were talking about that, we were talking about Inoki's influence and guys, and this is still the remnants of professional wrestlers, even with great collegiate backgrounds or great solid fighting backgrounds, being thrust into mixed martial arts. And then, you know, that is a cycle, you know, as we talked about a lot of positive ones, that's one I don't want to see. But if you're Kiyoshi Tamura, you know, that he's never been a pro wrestler. As far as the sports entertainment side of it, he's always been a UWFI styled guy. So that's a thing too, where how, you know, to me, you can walk a line and you can make both happen there. But you know, if he's the
I don't think you can.
And there's the thing, the lead of the deer. I don't think you can. Here, you could. To me, you absolutely can. We see it every day.
I don't think so. I think we've got decades of experience to show that this never works. And the only thing that happens is that it hurts.
No.
I
mean,
side.
No, I mean, as far as UWFI matches and bringing that style into professional wrestling and sports entertainment, that type of thing where the.
Well, they've already done that. That's not the issue. That's happening on the shows. What I'm saying is that.
But it's not, again, but they're also, it's not hugely successful either. So it's like you're taking resources away, you know, to, again, I don't know.
That's my
much
point,
time.
Is that you're, the whole thing was, you have a pro wrestling side and a UWF side. The pro wrestling side is, to a decent degree, thrived. They draw well for the level of promotion they are. The UWF side has been half-baked at best in terms of how much it's been presented on the shows. And so then now there's, we're thinking there's going to be enough oxygen in the room for the UWF side when you also are promoting legitimate MMA fights?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
It's literally never worked. It's never worked. And there's zero evidence to show that it will.
No, and concentrate on the first two and sell that and sell it harder to the people here. Sell it harder to wrestlers, to me. I mean, again, it's we've seen the successes of that type of action in wrestling, and we see how well ingrained MMA and that type of stuff is in professional wrestling now. So yeah, please concentrate on that. But should we move to Stardom? I'd like to talk about Stardom.
Yes,
now.
I've been on the verge of sending you a text message for the last 10 minutes saying that. But in any event, yes, before we make this a G1 length show, let's move to Stardom, because that's where a lot of the fun in pro wrestling is. We talked earlier about that awesome Taka Taichi Despy Mania show. The Stardom 5-Star Grand Prix, which is in its second month and will go through pretty much the rest of September. Much like a great match, a great tournament doesn't feel like it drags or takes forever and feels like you're never getting anywhere. 5-Star Grand Prix does not feel like it's dragging. We had, for, you know, smaller shows as far as not being pay-per-views, but two very good shows on the 3rd and 4th. The 3rd, Takamatsu City General Gymnasium Second Stadium, and then on the 4th in Hiroshima. Particularly, I don't know, have you had a chance to watch those shows first off?
Which ones are the third? Which the?
The 3rd and the 4th. The 3rd was main evented by Saya Kamatani against Mayu Iwatani. We also had Micah against Shuri. That was the semi-main event.
That I did see, yes.
Both those matches were awesome. I also really enjoyed the Starlight Kid Ami Sore match. I don't know. To me, she might, like, I don't think she, I think a lot of people, I guess what I'm trying to say is a lot of people don't realize how relatively inexperienced she is. And, like, to me, she's leveled up really quickly in Stardom. Now she has the, like, a Thunderbolt finisher, which is a variation of a Fire Thunder driver that has been getting her more wins in this tournament. But the match with Starlight Kid was very good. Mai Sakurai defeating Himeka, a surprise and upset, was certainly something to see her on this show. But, yeah, Micah and Shuri, 14 minutes, 28 seconds. Came very close to being a time limit draw, but Micah got the win with the Michinoku driver number 2. And then Saya Kamatani beating Mayu Iwatani with a Frankensteiner.
Match is awesome, and Mayu's awesome, and I'm weighing deep in the tank for Micah too. I she's got a great presence for her experience level too, and I just
but it feels like that's something that the presence aspect of it, like being comfortable, like in control of the character and in control of a match, that really feels like something that's come to the forefront this year, like in the last 6 months with her.
Yes, and she, again, she's perfect in that unit because she kind of gets forgotten about. Well, again, obviously, now everything's kind of broken up now with Shuri out, with God's Eye, whatever it is, because she's in God's Eye, right?
Yes, Shuri is the leader of God's Eye. Thank Micah, one of the charter members of Donna Del Mondo. And really, the story of this match was that, like, this was arguably Micah's biggest win.
Her she come up, beat yes. Shuri. Yes, and that, and she, again, she because of her, she's able to stand in there. She's believable. We've seen her with smaller people, and we saw her, you know, the tag match was a great example, and her mixing it up with Sori was a great example of what she can do and how she can be a bully in that aspect and work that way. But then, again, standing up and being able to strike and stand in there, I love that. I thought it was really, really good, and I really... Again, I don't think she's ever going to be a big star or anything like that, but she is going to be consistent as shit. You know, she is going to be at the top of that card as somebody you probably have to move up and be able to look good against to kind of move up there. Again, they have so much talent, and in the future, kind of looking forward, she just, to me, is going to be a real consistent rock for them for a long time.
Well, yeah, and I agree, and I think this year she's maybe shown that she could be even more than just that, like, Hirooki Goto level wrestler on a card. And that's the great thing about Stardom right now is that we've talked about it ad nauseum. There's so many people they can cycle in and out, whether it be due to injuries, whether you send somebody to the U.S. for a month or two. She's someone who I think is, well, I agree that I don't necessarily see her holding the red belt or the white belt anytime in the super near future. I also think she's closer to that and is a more legitimate contender for either of those belts than, you know, we would have thought at this time, you know, last year. Going on to the show on the 4th, I thought this was one of the best non-pay-per-view shows of the tournament. Momo Kogo, in a fairly ridiculous match, finally got her first 2 points of the tournament. We had Saya Kamatani beating Saya Iida. We're seeing a lot of times here on these non-pay-per-view shows, Kamatani use the 450 splash rather than the Phoenix splash, kind of as her big high flying finisher. Anybody, whether it's, you know, Saya Kamatani or a Sonata in New Japan, I always worry when you look at what you know, moonsaults or, you know, doing a top rope splash every night or a 450, anything like that. You always worry how quickly or not quickly a wrestler's knees are going to break down seeing them do that every night, but as long as she's doing it, it's damn impressive.
I didn't see the show, so I'm not even going to add anything to that.
Okay. Well, then I'll quickly run through everything else that was on here. Ami Sori and Hazuki. Sori getting the win, which kind of is necessary. When you looked at the points coming into this, Hazuki was absolutely running away with the Blue Stars block at 14 points on a huge roll, both in terms of points-wise and really – performance wise as well. Like, I think we talk about Micah as someone who's kind of leveled up their standing in the promotion. Hazuki, her performance over the past month and a half or so, to me, I look at her now as someone that I could very easily see in the next year holding the white belt.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Maybe somewhere down the line holding the red belt as well, which when she first came back, I wouldn't have necessarily had said that I would see that in her, you know, her near future.
No, but that, yeah, that this is not happening for no reason. And this was the result that stood out the most because she had just dropped the match to Kamatani. And then It's like, well, okay, let's see what they do here. And it was like, okay. So I can kind of see where they're going with this, you know, but it's, again, you know, 7 wins in a row and she's looked really good. And again, it's just another feather in their hat of, things are rolling right now for them. You know, obviously, I would love to have seen Nakano and Micah, so I'm going to have to go back and watch that. And Natsupoi and Mayu Iwatani, I'm sure, probably was pretty good.
It was awesome, especially, again, 7-minute match. I mean, these are all 15-minute time limits, and some of these matches are very fast. So you're not, you aren't necessarily getting like the depth of match that you would have had, you know, if they were going the full distance. But this was a great fast paced all action match. 7 minutes, Poi wins with a rolling Mahi Straw cradle. And then the main event, another one of, I would say, the best matches of the tournament, particularly if you're looking at non-pay-per-view matches, went almost as close to the time limit as you can get. Shuri and Himeka. Shuri getting the win with a White Tiger in 14 minutes and 48 seconds. The White Tiger being her sort of variation, modified version of, you know, a numero dos that El Desperado uses, a variation of a submission hold that many people use. That was very good. It was a get back on track win for her in the standings after, you know, dropping several falls as the champion, as the World of Stardom champion in this tournament. So that then brought us to a show that you and I both watched, the pay-per-view from the Yokohama Budokan. Looked very good on TV. Looked, you know, didn't look empty. Looked like a good crowd. And we had, you know, we had a battle royal, which Saeeda won. You had God's Eye versus Cosmic Angels, which was Tomoka Inaba's first match as part of God's Eye. I thought it was interesting in that, like, she eventually did get the win with her penalty kick, but she really, meaning Inaba, almost had no offense in the match other than that. So it was very different seeing this match juxtaposed with the awesome match that she was a part of, which we talked about at length from the Just Tap Out show.
That's true. And like, whatever the part is, all four of these women fit it. You know, Sayuri, yes, is a superstar. Inaba as young karate fighter. Super idol Shirakawa and, like, happy plucky friend Sukiyama. It was
Shirakawa, which, by the way, I know this was a non-tournament match. I think, and I know I mentioned it last week, I think she's had a great tournament. She's super underrated as a wrestler because the character is so over the top and is just so mean as Shirakawa. But, like, her timing's great. Her ring speed is great. She does stuff that she can do. She doesn't do stuff that she can't do. She started throwing really good kicks as of late, which, yes, I didn't necessarily expect. So, like, I always enjoy watching her in these sort of middle card matches. Like, I feel like she brings a lot more than people maybe recognize or admit.
Well, when you get kicked enough, sometimes you learn to give some of them back. But yeah, I mean, she is the best. As I said before, she's the best Mina Shirakawa in the whole wide world. And you, again, you look at her and you look at, you know, conversely, you know, her tag team partner. And it's like, you see where Unagi, you see the difference. You see where Shirakawa is leveling up. Unagi, I like her. I like her as a character. But, you know, there's a large difference between the two. And Shirakawa is, to me, again, making a lot more progress than let's say Unagi is. And yeah, she comes up a little bit later on because I'm happy she's still alive.
Yes, she's totally fine as a character. Like, she's competent, but I don't think there's a whole lot there just as far as bell to bell. But that doesn't matter because you've got a million other people in the company who are great bell to bell. And she brings so much value as a character in that group, as someone in 6-person, 8-person tags. So it's totally fine. But yes, she lost to Risa Sarah here. Diving double knee drop off the top by Risa Sarah.
Oh, it fucking sucked.
When you say that, you mean that looked like it hurt.
Oh, yeah. Sarah's shins came right. She goes up to the top, comes out okay, double foot stomp. Her shins came right down on Unagi, and that's fine. But she then came down straight up. Her knees didn't roll forward. She didn't hit the mat and, like, momentum go forward. When she came down, and Unagi is not a huge woman. So it's like you basically saw the shins of Risa Sarah meet the mat, just go right through her body.
Yes. Yes. It was brutal. It was a three count that looked like it was deserving of a three count. We then had
the
Himeka.
Evil smile, and I'm sorry because I don't want to extend this out too much, but the smile she had going up the ramp between her and Kasai with his smile, I don't know which one was more evil, because that was the thing. Like, Unagi looked like she was dead, and, like, Sarah goes up, and she turns around, and she's got the biggest shit-eating grin in the whole wide world. Like, bye. Excellent.
I've loved Risa Sarah in this tournament, and I'll be honest, like, when it was announced, you know, when Prominence came in and it was clear that they were going to have some level of involvement in Stardom, whether it be first through the feud with Donna Del Mondo or here in the tournament, like, I was extremely excited for Suzu Suzuki to wrestle everybody in Stardom. Risa Sarah, I really, like, I wasn't excited or not excited. It was just there. I really didn't think her match with Shuri was much at all for the red belt. So I wasn't overly excited about her being in this tournament. She's been awesome in the Firestar Grand Prix. It's been very nice to see.
Yeah, I've liked her a little bit more than you have. But, you know, presence of that whole deal, again, great presentation, great whole deal. I didn't realize she was, you know, as old as she is. Not that she's old, I mean, but, you know, again, I guess she's pushing 30. I kind of thought she was still in her 20s, but still, because she has been in Ice Ribbon and she has been other places, I don't know how much they're going to continue to utilize some of these women who would like to remain independent, but, like, damn, it's just been nice to see her in there, and it's a nice change of pace. And I think, again, if she comes in more as a full-timer, she fits in perfectly with the, with, again, the Utami Hayashishita set and that, you know, that side, Shuri. I think she fits in well with all of them, you know, in that group.
Yeah, yeah.
As far as wrestling matches go, as opposed to, obviously, your more of your idol stuff, your Shirakawas and stuff like that.
Yeah. Himeka defeats Saki. I mean, not a ton to this match. I mean, Himeka, 12 points. The big powerbomb gets the win, so Himeka's still very, very much in the mix at the top of the Red Stars block. Then we get to what I think maybe... I've gone back and forth whether this was my favorite match of the show or the main event, but Suzu Suzuki and Saya Kamatani was great. Just under 12 minutes, and I don't know how you could have a much better 12-minute match than these two had. And I know that Suzu Suzuki is very independent, and she is, you know, a lot of ways the driving force of Prominence, and she wants to do death matches, and that's great, more power to her. But man, if I'm Stardom and I have a certain budget to play with as far as what I can spend to bring wrestlers in, and we know they love bringing new wrestlers in, I'm maxing out as much of that budget, that line item, as I can to get Suzu Suzuki on shows as much as humanly possible. She is so great. She still is so early and so young in her career, and she brings something both as a character and as a wrestler that is completely different from everyone else on the roster. What a great contrast between her and Kamatani as wrestlers, as characters. The visual, everything about this match was awesome. Suzuki wins with the locomotion German suplex, getting the win over Saya Kamatani, which you would have to think at some point before the end of the year, that's going to lead to a Wonder of Stardom belt, a white belt championship match between these two. And with how great this was in 11:40, if they get to go 18 or 20 minutes, this could be not just a great match, but a legitimate match of the year candidate in a very, very crowded field, not only in Stardom, but across the landscape.
Yeah, I'm glad you're driving her bandwagon. So it's just, I just have to hop up on the back of it. She is outstanding. She's 19. She's not 20 until she will say, hey, happy birthday, because apparently on Friday she turns 20.
There you go.
She's great. And this match was booked great. And that layout of it was great, because you had to do something here to make you think this heavy underdog had a shot. And from the time it started, Suzuki poured it on. And she hurt Kamatani. And she went outside the ring and was like, okay. And then she kept pouring it on. And they made you believe that she had a shot, because she kept kicking her ass. Because you're thinking, too, it's like, you know, you got your wrestling brain and the psychology of, okay, at some point, Kamatani's going to come back. And we just had a match. You know, this is following that Saki match that you mentioned went, you know, half the time pretty much that this did, but Saki actually held the advantage for the entire match pretty much until Himeka got it. And in this one, it's like, oh, okay, Suzuki doesn't have a win yet. She's nuts. She's probably going to get disqualified. She's going to make a mistake. Something's going to happen here. But as it kept going, you had that meter in your mind kept going down a little bit more. And then by the time Kamatani got a little bit of a comeback right before the end, you know, she hulked up, she caught her on the top rope, but then, and this is a thing, and we'll get with Julia later on too, guys with the headbutts, ladies, please stop with the headbutts. But after the headbutt, we got that locomotive, the German. It was great. The whole thing was laid out great, it ended great, and you can't throw more superlatives on Suzuki at 19 years old. I mean, just brilliant. And again, she may be ungovernable, but if she's willing, you know, if you can, if she's willing, you know, even if she's not willing, make sure you have some sort of deal where, and lines of communication where you can continue to bring her back, because she's going to be a star and she's going to continue to build fans. I have a feeling for a long time. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's going to end up going to come to America. People are going to see her on a GCW show or a West Coast Pro show. Oh, and she's going to be one of those people out. She's going to end up having some heavy buzz. So I hope it works out and she joins Stardom. But
how much of buzz among, like, hardcore, you know, GCW fans, whatever you want to say, American indie fans that enjoy, you know, a bit of the deathmatch. How much buzz Rina Yamashita has had coming over to the U.S. these last couple of years. And no slight to her. She's great at what she does. But Suzuki is another level. I'm very excited to see whenever that happens. And I just think, you know, when all this happened with Prominence forming, with, you know, all them leaving Ice Ribbon, you know, a lot of questions of, like, what is Suzu Suzuki's career going to be, you know, going forward? Like, what is the path to her doing more than just kind of, you know, going across the country, you know, working smaller shows, you know, occasional Prominence produced shows? And here we see what, you know, kind of what the path is, even if she doesn't go full-time Stardom. Like, it seems like it's going very well, and I can't imagine either side not wanting to continue at least going down the path that they've gone so far with her in Stardom.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so. Next match was Azumi and Utami Hayashishita. This only went 6 minutes and 55 seconds, a quick battle of Queen's Quest with Azumi getting the victory.
When you think about it, a huge win for Azumi.
It is.
Hayashishita, even if she hasn't been, up until recently, you know, considered the leader of Queen's Quest, for all intents and purposes, she has been. This is not someone that Azumi has gotten singles wins over in the past. This puts Azumi at 12, keeps Hayashishita at 8. All action, in some ways, while they're different types of wrestlers, similar to the Natsupoi Mayu Iwatani match, in that, you know, the two of them have a great match that's 2 to 3 times as long as this in them against each other in a non-tournament setting. But here, for what it was, like, this is what a lot of times makes the 5-star Grand Prix so great, in that you had a match that really, it just started immediately with like a 7-minute finishing stretch. And that was the entire match. You had a great finish. Azumi hitting the Canadian Destroyer on Hayashishita and then going straight into her Azumi Sushi roll-up pin to get the win. So very, very good stuff here, and I can't wait to see somewhere down the line the two of them have a bigger singles match going forward. I'm always on the lookout for any signs that both Azumi and Starlight Kid on a singles level are going to find their way out of just being in the high-speed championship scene, and really one, if not both of them, not only getting a white belt or red belt title shot, but actually holding one of those belts going forward. So how this tournament's gone so far, I think, is a fairly decent sign of where Azumi's standing is in the promotion.
You know, I didn't love it, and I thought, you know, to get this type of victory over, and granted, it's the 5-star Grand Prix, so you're going to have victories like this, but, like, You know, I wish this would have been that match that was three times longer and we got three times more and she got the victory. And I think, you know, and again, it is just picking nits here for me, but I didn't love it as much as you did. Of course, it was also because it was sandwiched between, for me, the best match, which was the Suzuki match, and then Mayu and Julia that would have been even better, except, you know, they had a plan for the end of it, and with hindsight being 2020, I know exactly, you know, why it was the way that it was. But, you know, this could have been, again, if you got a finish and you got a little bit more time to it, this probably would have been the match of the night. And
well, think just back to their time limit draw that they had a couple months ago. And it sure as hell feels like everything about this tournament, really going back to last year when it couldn't happen, everything feels like it's Julia winning this tournament and going on to defeat Shuri.
Yeah.
For the red belt, most likely on the December 29th show. Who knows, maybe sooner, but I would imagine that would be when the match would happen. And man, you want to talk about the next big title match after that, or one of Julia's biggest first defenses she could have? A match against Mayu Iwatani when they've only gone to draws prior.
Yep.
You know, that's, talk about a match that has match of the year and big crowd written all over it. So this was great. Like you said, it could have been even better if the circumstances were different, but it's totally understandable why the circumstances weren't different. And so we move on with both of them.
Yeah, we talked about it on the show. You know, we've had the same vision for Julia, you know, and I'm in the tank for her. And I think, you know, her with that belt, the matches that you can make, the things that you can do, not the least of which is another match with Iwatani. She's the answer. She is the star. And
well, maybe is the only way that she doesn't win this tournament and go on to win the red belt, if with the idea now that we have an IWGP Women's Championship, is it more valuable for her to win that tournament and have that championship? You know, that's the only thing I could see that would change what seems like it's been an obvious direction for the last year plus.
Yeah, actually, that would be a great idea. That would be it would be interesting because it would then be a matter of the booking and how you utilize that champion and that championship, and do they travel? And, you know, there's some, you know, to me,
well, I think it definitely travels. I mean, that's one of the main stated purposes of that title, is for it to be defended on New Japan USA shows. Well,
Julie is one of the people that I'm putting on the plane.
Any other shows.
And putting every single place that I can in front of every single media source that I can. You know, I want her. I want Mayu. And again, I don't know how many people you can spare at a time to do that, but like,
I still think Natsupoi is absolutely one of the people that should be, you know, really heavily pushed and presented in America whenever that time comes as well. I mean, there's no shortage of people. Starlight Kid, obviously, as well. You know, I talked up before how I would have just thrown, I'd send Himeka and Izumi over and tell them to do that match, that 8-minute match they did a few weeks ago in the Five Star Grand Prix. Do that on a big show in the U.S. and people are going to just go crazy. But yeah, there's no shortage of people.
No, and Siuri, to a different extent, because of her background, because it's a relatable thing, it's so easy with the UFC thing. It's, oh, okay, you know, and you see her work. And again, Julia is the one that I look at and go, okay, she is your Okada in my eyes, and I could be batshit insane, but I think she's your Tanahashi, she's your Okada, and wherever you can get her and make the name of Stardom bigger, and as much as you can, you know, put it on her back, when you have so many strong backs there, I just, you know, again, that's what I thought they were going with this. That's the direction I think they're going, is exactly what you said, and I think you have Iwatani, and then you have Kairi, and then you go and you have so many matches that she can have, and hey, I'm for it.
Absolutely. I mean, I would say I definitely don't see Julia as the Tanahashi type. I think if you're going to, and again, we only do these comps just as a way to try to bring in people who are more familiar with New Japan and aren't as familiar with Stardom. They're
and
never
I'm old,
one-to-one,
so I would say Chono.
Really a fair thing to do, but it's just, you know, it's the easiest way to describe someone if they're not familiar with them. But I would see Julia much more as an Okada type than a Tanahashi. But that's neither here nor there. we're getting deep into the show, so we need to talk about the main event of the pay-per-view. Tam Nakano and Natsupoi defeating Mirai and Ami Sore. Just over 20 minutes. Nakano pinning Sore with the Twilight Dream suplex hold, which is an awesome move, an awesome suplex. But I thought this, maybe, again, I keep going back and forth whether the Suzuki Kamitani or this was the best match on the show. But like when I watch this match and you see the crowd and you see the crowd reaction, it just makes it so obvious why Nakano and Natsupoi are the perfect choice to be tag team champions right now. I don't know that there's a ton of teams that you could main event a pay-per-view with and have it feel like a legit pay-per-view main event in Stardom, both in terms of star power and as wrestlers. But Nakano and Natsupoi are 100% that team. And I'd be very surprised if going forward we don't see this happen a few more times where not the biggest pay-per-views of the year, but some of these shows, as they've continued to run more pay-per-views, end up being main evented by title defenses for Nakano and Natsupoi.
Yeah, any other place, you know, Natsupoi, perfect for Cosmic Angels in Donna Del Mondo, and they didn't fit it and just keep her there or any of that stuff. They actually made the move. She's in the perfect place. She's got a perfect partner. They are perfect tag team champions. They really, really are. And Mariah and Sore, I thought, again, they were really awesome and held up their end of the deal in this 20 minutes. But, you know, Natsupoi is, again, I don't know if Nakano will ever get the credit she, you know, truly deserves, you know, outside.
She won't. And I think a lot of it is because not enough people saw her at the beginning. Where for as good of a character as she was not very good in the ring at all. As much as I was a fan of her, like she was not very good in the ring. And the transformation that she's made over the last several years to becoming legitimately one of the best wrestlers of the world and doing it in such a different way in terms of emotion and storytelling, on top of having enough athleticism to keep up, well, she's fantastic. And, you know, as the continued talk of, you know, how much longer is she going to wrestle goes on, putting Natsupoi in that group is such a perfect move because you immediately have, as they continue to build her up more and more and make her more and more of being one of the main stars in the promotion, you've got your person to step in and be the leader of Cosmic Angels if and when Tam ever steps aside.
So where are we at right now with the, really, let's see, where are we at with the results and the actual standings?
Well,
right
I did
now.
Want to, before we get off of that, and we don't have to go into the Corican show, which just happened yesterday, because neither of us have watched that yet, and we'll definitely talk about it on next week's show, but I just did want to talk about Mirai and Sore as a tag team, because I would be shocked if they aren't the tag team champions within the next year, and maybe if they aren't the team to eventually defeat Nakano and Natsupoi down the line. Maybe winning a tag league or something like that. But I thought they looked great here. I thought these last couple of days, Mirai here on the 11th and then on the show that we talked about earlier, the big JTO show with her teaming with Micah, I thought that was the best she's looked in several months. Not that she hasn't been good, but I kind of felt like we've talked about like the massive upward trajectory of her, both in terms of like as a character that gets cheered, as a wrestler that gets cheered, her push, but also just in ring. Not that that had regressed in any way, but it just kind of felt like she had plateaued. These last two shows, I felt like she hit another level in ring as a wrestler. And so I'm really excited to see where the next several months go, where the rest of her tournament and into the new year ago. So I just want to get that in because I think they're a great team, a bit of a Williams and Gordy vibe to them, just wrecking people with double shoulder blocks. So looking forward to what we have with them going forward.
Yeah, and she's better off in a team. And, you know, I'm not as bullish.
I think that's fair at this point. I think they're both better off in a team and they'll be better singles wrestlers a year from now for it.
Yeah, because I'm not as bullish on her as you are as far as the singles go. But the fact is they're bullish on her. I mean, if she would have gotten the win last night, she would have jumped over Julia, and that didn't happen. So, but she's also had a very, very solid tournament here as well, too. So, things are bright right now because of the amount of people that they have and the amount of people flowing in and out. And we'll see how all this New Japan work. Again, there's a hole here in the States, too, that needs to be filled with women's wrestling. So, again, with these New Japan Strong shows, if we can get any Stardom talent at all to come over and get some, again, just see a new country, see new styles, see new trainers, wrestle new people, all that sort of stuff. It really is just going to benefit everybody down the line. And you're getting to the point where you have so many people on the roster, you're kind of going to have to do that. You know, at least in my eyes, you're kind of going to have to do that because they're not going to stop acquiring talent. Now, obviously, the situation's a little bit different over there where there is nobody else to really bid on where you're not having to throw tons of money at Risa Sera because she might go somewhere else with her group and her, you know, people that are training with her or whatever it is. So, you know, you have a little bit of space that way. But at some point, again, you have so many people, so many factions that you have. You know, the more the better. So the more that these people can get out there, the more shows they can be run under a Stardom banner or a New Japan banner, however you want to call it, I'm all for.
Yeah, that all gets underway. We'll see on actual Strong tapings, but you know, October 28th, the big New Japan show in New York City, we'll have several Stardom wrestlers on that show. So we'll see where that goes from there after that. But yeah, I definitely hope we see that on New Japan Strong tapings going forward. So let's wrap this up, Mike, because this is shockingly another marathon show of well over 90 minutes. So we should wrap it up by saying you and I, as we talk about, always have multiple other projects. And I think for both of us, those are kicking into a higher gear. I'll just say on my side, getting back to a more regular run of the Three Count Fall newsletter, had an issue come out last week. Definitely check that out. AdamSummers.substack.com, where I write about in more depth pretty much all the things we talk about here on this show. You know, get into things a little bit more with my perspective and just forward-looking and also talking about things a little bit more off the beaten path. The other thing I wanted to mention is that you've heard me talk about before on this podcast that I have another podcast, which you can also listen to for free, Wrestling at Random, which if you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, any of those podcast homes, if you search Wrestling at Random right now, you can find that show as well. And season 4 has just begun. We just had our first episode of season 4 last week, reviewing of all things a TNA pay-per-view from 2008. That is what the randomizer pulled for us, with Kurt Angle versus Christian Cage in the main event, a barbed wire massacre match between Abyss and Judas Macias that was nowhere near as good as the death match that Jun Kasai and El Desperado had. But very fun show. It's evergreen content, so you can listen to it at any time. But that is available now, either at WrestlingAtRandom.com or, like I said, just search Wrestling at Random where you're listening to this podcast right now.
Exactly. And if you need even more, I know where you can find it. Wrestling Observer Live every single day. That's me and Brian Alvarez, where I sit there and listen to Brian Alvarez rant about things like, you know, the picture going black and white on WWE TV and a bunch of other stuff that I just have to survive and get through until I have the chance to record another Mid-Atlantic Championship podcast. You can find that on Twitter at Mid-Atlantic Pod. It has been on a little bit of a hiatus for right now because I have been helping to kick off the wrestling news in your daily wrestling newscast that you can find anywhere that you find this show. If you have I can't say the name because it'll come on right now, but if you got one of those Amazon Echo gimmicks, you can tell the girl to play the wrestling news podcast.
And I'm actually looking at mine right now in fear that if you say that, it will turn it on.
I know. Mine's plugged
in. Yes, I just want to jump into the middle of this, Mike, because I cannot, and I know I mentioned it last week, as much as I joked about, like, hey, you need to do this correction. Everybody listening to this podcast, if you enjoy professional wrestling and you want to keep up with things without having to listen to 3 hours of someone talking or having to read a newsletter, you just want the news and you want to feel like you know what's going on, like you're abreast of everything, even if you don't watch every promotion, the Wrestling News is the podcast for you. I cannot recommend it highly enough. I start my morning every time I eat my Wheaties and I listen to the Wrestling News.
It is between 8 and 20 minutes or so every single day and just basically giving you all of the facts. There's no conjecture. There is no rumor. There is none of that stuff. If it has been reported, by the wrestling news itself, and I know Brian Last is a very polarizing figure, as am I. There can be no question about Brian Solomon, who wrote the Sheik book, who was an editor for WWE Magazine for many years and worked for them for a long time. You know, we are really, you know, our side projects aside, who we do shows with, whether it be Cornette or Alvarez or whoever aside, we are looking at this very seriously as the news, as none of the nonsense, just pure facts to get your day started. We're going to be growing it, hopefully even more, but this is not to get in anybody else's, step on any toes or get in anybody else's lane. This was a hole that we felt we could fill by just starting your day between 8 and 20 minutes with just facts that you need to know from the day before, the night before, and what to look forward to as the day goes on. You know, we have news from Mexico. I do keep you abreast on things taking place from Japan. Obviously not in the detail here, but if title matches change, if there are big matches, I'm going to cover those things and you're going to hear them every day. So I'm really happy about that. And I'll go ahead and just end it there. And I will just want to really thank a lot of people that have been listening to us for a long, long time, going back into the Press with Power Hour days. We've been doing this now together for 20 years. And
yes, yeah, so you and I together, whether it be the PPH or this show, this past June, it will be 17 years of us doing podcasts together, more than 16 years of doing this show together.
Yeah, I've been with Jess now. We're in October, it's going to be 20 years. 17 years with you, Adam. You're the second longest relationship I've ever had.
Nothing in my life is the same as it was 17 years ago, except for the fact that once a week, or I guess more accurately, once every couple of weeks, you and I hop on a computer and do this show together. So it's on top of just loving talking about this stuff, because it's my favorite thing in the world, it's just it's a nice anchor point in my life to continue doing this with you. So I don't know. We're getting rambly. We need to wrap this up.
I'll just say this. You know, you love to write. I love to talk. And because of this show, we are now able to do Three Count Fall and do the wrestling news and do the other things that we do, but especially those two things, because I think, again, I the wrestling news has been something I want to do for a long time. I love radio. I love that sort of thing. And I know how much you like to write. And I know, again, that Three Count Fall is just like the wrestling news is every day. Every time Adam comes out with that, even if you listen to this show, even if you stay abreast of everything, it is an essential guide to have in your pocket. It's a nice thing to have. And because of everybody supporting this show and us over the years, we're able to do those things now. So thank you.
Absolutely. Could not say it any better. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Mike. And we'll be back soon.